Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday, February 25th, and I'm Lisa. Joining me today, I have Steve, I have Chris, Bob, Natalie, and we have a special guest speaker today, and that's going to be Chris. Welcome, everyone. We're going to be bringing you news from all around Disney. We have a little bit of news. We're going to be talking about Disneyland and the Disney Wonder, Disney Cruise Line. And why don't we kick it off? Do we have any announcements, Steve, regarding our...
I do. Our hidden pixie item that Chris Sharps, who's on tonight's call, or today's podcast, and myself actually hid something on the Disney Wonder. So we have clue number two.
Very creatively tucked away.
Yeah, and so it's going to be... if anybody's on the ship, they're going to find it because it's not that difficult to find. So last week we told everybody it was on level number 3, and today's clue is Route 66.
That'll do it for announcements, I think. Let's jump right into news. And you know what? I'm going to start off news today. What I wanted to talk about was the introduction or the revealing of Next Gen, which is going to be a new concept for Disney parks. It sounds really cool. Hopefully it'll all go off without a hitch, but they're going to slowly introduce different aspects of this new plan. And what the plan is that it'll be a lot more plan ahead friendly, I guess, to plan your Disney vacation. You're going to be mailed your Key to the World card. That Key to the World card is going to be encrypted with all your necessary information. And you're going to be able to reserve showtimes, your space at Fantasmic. You'll get to reserve a seat ahead of time. You'll get to reserve character meet and greet times. It'll be kind of neat because you'll get a wristband and that'll have the microchip in it and it'll have your children's name in there. And so when you go through the meet and greet line, the characters are going to be able to greet your children or your child by their first name. And that'll be pretty neat. I don't know everything that's going to be involved in this, but it's cutting edge Disney technology. So I'm interested to see how that's going to work out.
That's some exciting stuff.
It is. I think it is.
Now for me, I can hardly make our dining reservations. So I'm not real excited about trying to plan 180 days ahead. On my fast passes and my show times.
No. I think you're going to have some crazy people out there. I mean, people already go to the parks with spreadsheets, and now you're going to just amp that up a lot more.
It's going to be great for the people that do plan ahead, but there are so many people that don't have an inkling on what it takes to plan a Disney vacation, and they go without making dining reservations. They go without studying the park maps, without a game plan, and now there's going to be all these other people that much further ahead of them. And you know, they don't know what a fast pass is, and
they don't even know there's four parks.
Right.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. That's all the more reason to use a trusted travel agent.
That's true.
I think that kind of speaks to an issue that I have had all along, which is that, you know, people who go all the time, they know to start planning, you know, 6 months to a year in advance. But other people, like, for example, my neighbors, they might plan 2 or 3 months out. And while I like personally having that edge for myself, you know, with reservations and everything else, I kind of feel bad for people who kind of don't have it and who won't have the best experience because of it. And this is going to be a nightmare. I don't think they'll keep this. This is going to be like when they switched to the 90-day reservations for ADRs, and then they had to go back to 180 days.
Well, and what happens with, you know, people such as myself who are local or fairly local who...
Good point.
don't need to make reservations, who just pop into the parks. Am I going to now have to compete to get on, you know, Splash Mountain because thousands of people have made reservations 180 days in advance? Or am I going to be denied a seat at Fantasmic? Because this is akin to what happened with dining. It used to be that locals could pop into a theme park or one of the hotels, resorts, you know, for dinner, and there was generally a lot of availability. Suddenly, you know, you have to make dining reservations 180 days out, and that option has basically been cut off for locals.
I don't imagine them using this as an exclusive tool. I would imagine a certain number of seats or a certain number of positions would be dedicated for people to use this service, but I can't imagine them using it as an exclusive way to get access to all of the attractions that it's offered for.
No, I don't think so either. But it's still taking away from the people that don't plan or the people that really have no use for it. And is this only going to be a benefit to people staying on property, or is it going to be available to people staying off property? And
well, you got to I'd assume it's on property because that's another one of their advantages to get you to stay on property. But I just don't want to plan that far ahead. And even if you know, then, you know, your plans change or it might take longer to see a attraction that you didn't have a reservation for and you might fall behind on your schedule. And I like to, you know, kind of have a few things planned, but then just kind of do the rest of the day at a nice leisurely pace. I don't want to spreadsheet out my whole week.
Wonder if you have to plan your bathroom breaks.
It could be in there.
Make a reservation. That's right.
Reservation to pee.
Reserve? Are you going to pre-reserve the number of paper towels you need?
Use the bathroom between 4 and 5, and another bathroom pass will be available between, you know, 8 and 9.
Don't you think also it kind of takes the spontaneity out of your trip?
Totally.
Like Steve said, you know, I like to plan some things, but I like to have most of it kind of open. And I like to leave room for those kind of moments to just sort of happen and not necessarily, you know, be rigid and tied to a schedule. I hate this idea. It's not going to last.
And here's the other thing. They are saying that they, you know, this whole thing could cost upwards of $1 billion.
To implement?
You know, to implement. Now, I can understand, you know, the whole premise of getting people in the parks, because it's a lot like what Las Vegas does. You know, they want you at the craps table. They want you, you know, playing blackjack, you know, spending money. But $1 billion, if you want people in the parks, take that $1 billion and, hell, invest that in you know, Hollywood Studios or back into the parks or
give discounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other ways. I do like the idea of the characters actually interacting. That is good.
That's the best part of it. But all this advanced reservation stuff is just too much.
I think the advanced reservations for something like Fantasmic could be a good idea. But
sure,
they already kind of have that going with the Fantasmic dining.
Mm-hmm.
So stick with that. And not to mention, they're going to get those odd dining hours filled in conjunction with the reserved seating. So they should just stick with that as far as I'm concerned.
I think there's going to be a lot of positives to this, though. For some people, they really just can't stand to have not planned their vacation literally out to the last minute. I think this will give options for those people, but I really don't see it being a negative in the grand scheme of things.
Well, the money is definitely a negative. Like Bob was saying, Bob mentioned, you know, putting the money somewhere else, it's a better idea, in my opinion. I like the bracelet with the character greeting the wristband, and so they know your name. That's cool. But $1 billion, that is a lot. There's a lot more they could do with that $1 billion.
I mean, that's what they're spending on Disney California Adventure. To upgrade that park and bring improvements and the changes in that park are pretty dramatic. Yeah,
that's all right. Mickey, Bob, Mickey's going to know your name next time. Just think about that.
That's cool.
And Mickey's going to know every step you make because of that chip in that bracelet.
Sure will.
How much I'm spending in the park and You know, they may deny me a bathroom break if I'm not, you know, above a certain threshold. You know, I may have to.
If you haven't bought X number of soft drinks yet.
Yeah, exactly. You've been using the water fountains. You're not allowed to use the restroom.
That's right. Go get a soda and then we'll talk.
Well, and then it's supposed to improve your check-in time as well. So I'm not sure if that's really going to make a big enough difference.
Well, I like that idea of getting the key cards in advance. Well,
the idea is you already have your card and you just go right there. You just go right to the park.
How many of those cards are going to disappear in the mail and we got to chase them?
Right.
Oh, I know.
Right.
That's going
to
be.
But I'm wondering, you know, what if that information is tied to your credit card because it is a room charge and there's just a little bit of room for trouble, it seems. A little bit room for shady dealings. If someone did find that in the mail, if it did get misdelivered or something, I don't know. It just seems like something bad could happen.
I would imagine they'll also use it to deploy transportation. Because, I mean, if it is a GPS locator by any chance, they could easily tell where a group of people might be moving, and they could deploy transportation in a much more rapid manner. It's going to be very interesting to see what else they're going to be able to do with this.
Waiting on a line or something like that. Yeah. Oh, we've got a lot of people standing in line for X attraction. Put in more ride vehicles.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be a major positive.
Yeah, but couldn't they just look at the line and say, hey, we need some more ride vehicles?
Disney likes hard and fast knowledge. They invest a lot of money into individuals to take surveys and things of that nature. Just in our trip to Disneyland, I was stopped four times for opinion survey, and each one of them was a different survey. So it was Disney invests a lot in their research. So I think this is part of that whole package.
So what'd you get for doing your surveys?
Emails.
More surveys.
More surveys.
Say, they know that you're going to answer them now.
I got offered to do a survey, and I had to keep track of what all I spent, and they was going to give me a $25 Disney store gift card.
Oh, that's kind of
exciting.
Cool.
Did you do it?
No. I lost all my receipts and couldn't keep up with it.
Oh. All right, so there's my news story. Does anyone else have a news story for tonight?
I have a news story, and it's kind of related. When Mickey moves into his new residence in the Magic Kingdom, he's going to be at the Expo Hall. They'll now have fast passes for that. So you'll have a one-hour block of time to go in and do that character meet and greet.
Oh, okay. So it's not like your traditional fast pass or any time after. It's basically within that hour?
You know, that was what I read, but who knows? Who knows if they'll...
Yeah,
you know,
they're also adding an interactive queue line for guests who don't do the fast pass and just want to get on the line. So it sounds like they're going to pull some people from fast pass and then a couple people from the standby line and then more people from fast pass and keep going back and forth just like they do with fast pass attractions.
Bob, do you know if they're going to have other characters in the expo hall or is it just Mickey and Minnie?
I believe that they are going to move some of the princesses over there.
Even though they have that other area in Fantasyland?
Well, that other area in Fantasyland, if you're talking about Snow White.
Right. That's not open yet, I guess.
That's not open yet.
Okay.
So I imagine once that area is open, they'll evict the princesses from Exposition Hall and put them into Fantasyland. But yeah, from what I've heard, they're going to put Mickey over in Exposition Hall, and they're going to move some of the princesses over there as well.
Well, all this transitioning, the life of a princess isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Yep, and that's what my story is too. Mine is the moving of the fairies over to Epcot.
Thank God.
I know. So the fairies, they have moved them over to Epcot between Mouse Gears and the Kim Possible booth.
I want to know what Chris's reaction was. Why the thank God?
You know, I never really liked the whole Pixie Hollow thing at all. I never liked any of that. However, I think, you know, if you're going to have some continuity with, you know, with the whole story behind Tinkerbell and all the fairies, it doesn't really make sense to have them in that part of Epcot, right? I mean, you should have them in the UK pavilion.
Yeah, it's kind of a, that's like kind of where that bridge is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like on the bridge on the way over on the left-hand side, I guess, if I'm walking towards World Showcase.
Is that where they're having Duffy right now?
Well, Duffy's, yeah, he's like once you get over the bridge on the left.
Okay.
Sitting here in speculation of free dining offers, that's all. I've seen several flurry of rumors that it's going to be announced soon. But then there's also other information out there about future ports for Disney Cruise Line and things of that nature. But we can always talk about that stuff later.
Could you elaborate just a tiny bit on your rumor about free dining?
I've heard that free dining will be announced at the beginning of May.
Okay.
I've picked that up from more than one location. And historically, looking back, that was also time when it has been released as well. But also from two other sources that I had read say that the offer is not going to be as long as what it had been in the past due to the upswing in the economy and the record number of visitors during non-peak periods from the last 24 months. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see that.
Well, the rooms are full. I can't get nothing.
Right. So. No, we were just talking about this today on Facebook that I tried to book a week at the suites, at the All-Star Suites. I couldn't get anything in September. Nothing.
Yeah, and that was what the statistics that were out there said, that September is no longer even a slow peak period month.
Right.
So it's moving further even into October and November, and even with the special events that they've been having with Food and Wine and with Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, that really boosts attendance for those low periods.
Well, and you have to think too that those discounts have been out for a while, the room discount and the kids free. And if you have a kids free, where are they going to go? They're going to go to the suites, right? So, you know, I'm not surprised that the values in the suites are filling up.
Now, it sounds like the Art of Animation Resort can't open soon enough.
Very much so. Yeah, that's the family suites from information that I gathered from a cast member on our last trip. The family suites are almost entirely booked up in almost every month except for the very slowest times of the year.
Yeah, same thing with their cruise ships. We were talking to Disney last night about the Disney Dream, and they're pretty well booked up.
Yeah, the parties are getting – travel parties are getting bigger, group travel, a lot more groups, a lot more families. Families are finally realizing that vacationing together isn't a horrible thing. We're dealt the family that we are in life, and we might as well celebrate with them.
And actually, you know, Disney presents a very good value. I think a misconception that it's so much more expensive than a lot of other trips, but when you start pricing things out – it isn't necessarily, especially if you can get in on an offer like, you know, free dining, you know, that saves a lot of money.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, renting a beach house or something can even be very expensive for a week.
So many people think that Disney vacations are extremely expensive, and the same way with Disney cruises. But when you look at the overall value of those two different types of vacations, I would encourage anyone to shop around and find the same caliber and quality of entertainment for a comparable price tag. It just isn't there.
Right. And Disney allows you to pay over time interest free. I mean, you can book a trip a year out and just make payments on it as, you know, as you want.
I was going to just say, as far as value and such, Steve points out a lot. There have been concerts in the past that I've wanted to go to, or, you know, maybe go to the theater, and he'll look at the ticket price. And if it's, you know, a concert we looked at was $200 a ticket, and he's like, are you kidding me? That is like, he equates everything to Disney World tickets.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can go to Disney World for the whole day and have a whole experience and a show and fireworks. And this is compared to like a hour and a half or 2 hour concert.
Right. So whether it's a concert or the theater, he's always equating things to these Disney tickets. And
yeah, then you got to pay like $30 to park, and you got to pay some crazy amount for food.
Well, and people complain that Disney tickets are expensive, but honestly, and I was just talking with my aunt about this, that you can't pay – where else – there aren't many places that you can go and get the kind of entertainment that you get at Disney for the $70 or $80, and that's on a one-day ticket. You know, you you do one of the multi-days and you're down to $40 or sometimes, you know, in the 30s. So,
yeah, a ride all day pass at even local type amusement parks, you're looking at anywhere between $25 to $50. And once you've been there for maybe 5 to 6 hours, you're running out of things to do. And more importantly, there's nothing to look forward to as far as nighttime entertainment. And then the different type of entertainment options that are available at Disney parks just aren't there at local entertainment venues. So when you look at the quality of a Disney vacation and the value of the entertainment that you get with your admission price, it's very affordable.
Agreed. How did we get on this topic? We strayed.
Talking about the rumor of free dining coming up.
Ah, yes. I guess it does. Let's go ahead and jump into our topic tonight. Steve, why don't you take the reins and go for it?
Yeah, so it's probably been about 2 weeks now. Chris Sharps and I went over to California and went to experience Disneyland and then also the Wonder, because Disney Cruise Line has moved the Wonder over there for a Mexican Riviera itinerary, which is 7 days. So we went ahead and did that. So we were just going to go over, some of the basics from getting from the airport over to Disneyland. Just a couple quick highlights over at Disneyland. If you haven't been, how it compares to Disney World. A few of the hotels that we went and toured. World of Color that we got to see. Some of those things. And then go on to the Disney Wonder and talk about some of the new ports and experiences we did there. So I'll just start off with transportation, since it's a little bit different than going from getting to Disney World on Magic Express. They have the Disneyland Express, but it is not free, and it is actually run by Gray Line. So you can go ahead and purchase tickets for that. They also have a Super Shuttle, which is kind of a van service, and you can take that as well. And that takes you over to Disneyland. You just pick them up right outside.
Okay, the Disneyland Express, I just learned this, they quit picking up at, what, 9:30? Is the last run 9 or 9:30? So if you have
I think it's 10:30.
Well, I have a client coming in at 10:30, and they can't do anything but the Super Shuttle.
Oh, so that's interesting.
Yeah, they told me 9 o'clock was the last time it picked up.
Oh,
so they had
well,
to
then maybe that's changed because I'm flying out there next week, and I have a flight that doesn't arrive till after 9:30, and I'm booked on the Disney Shuttle.
Yeah, the Disneyland Shuttle is different than the Super Shuttle. There are more than one transportation options that are available, and a lot of them advertise Disney on the side of their buses, but there's really only one Disneyland Express, and that's, like Steve said, that's the one that's operated through Gray Line, and that information is available on Disney's website.
Yeah, so that one's – I'm looking at the flyer now. That one's $32 for an adult or junior for the round trip, and it's an actual full-size bus. Now, the Super Shuttle, and I did that the other time that I was there in January, that one is it looks like that one's the exact same price as well. They've got it listed as at $32 for an adult as well, and that one's just a van. You still have to pick up your luggage. They don't pick that up for you.
I flew into Orange County, the SNA airport at Santa Ana, and it's the transportation is very easy to find. But as Steve might talk about in a minute, it varies if you're just going to the Disneyland Resort or if you are going on a Disney cruise. There's two different transportation options for those two different experiences.
All right. So Chris and I stayed over at actually on property at the Paradise Pier. So Disneyland has three actual Disney hotels. They have Paradise Pier, the Disneyland Hotel, and the Grand Californian. Paradise Pier, if you've been to Walt Disney World, it's very hard to compare the resorts at Disneyland to Disney World. Paradise Pier was actually owned by a third party, as well as the Disneyland Hotel, and then Disney bought the Disneyland Hotel pretty much right after they made their money back from building the Magic Kingdom, and then they purchased Paradise Pier Hotel later on, and then they actually built the Grand Californian. So if you're used to a Disney World hotel, the Grand Californian is the most like kind of like a Wilderness Lodge or Animal Kingdom Lodge. The other ones are like traditional hotels that Disney has gone in and kind of rethemed. So Paradise Pier, it's all enclosed. I guess I would consider it kind of your, I guess it's more of a value to moderate type level. And then your Disneyland hotel is kind of a moderate to sort of a deluxe. And then Grand California is definitely your deluxe accommodations. Paradise Pier, it had really nice rooms, had a really good character buffet. It's right next to the park. It's across the street from the Grand Californian. So you walk across the street, you cut through the Grand Californian, and you're at the park. The only thing, I guess the downside is if you're looking for a pool, the pool at that location is very small. It's just a small rectangular pool. So if you're planning on just spending your time in the park, I think it's a good hotel. But if you're spending some time at the hotel, I think I would pick one of the others.
As far as proximity to the parks, the Grand Californian would be the closest. The Disneyland Hotel would be the furthest. Not by much of a distance, but still it is a little bit further away than what Paradise Pier is. There, as far as distance goes, Paradise Pier really does kind of fall right in the middle, but it does provide a lot of great views over into California Adventure.
And how is the construction coming along at Disneyland Hotel? I know they're changing over all the rooms.
Yeah, it's so very loud.
Yeah. So I stayed there in January, and they were still working on – well, the whole center section was pretty much closed except for the pool, and they had it all walled off so you could just get to the pool. And it's still the same way in the center, and then they were working on the main tower when we were there in February. So there's still a lot of construction at the Disneyland Hotel.
Mm-hmm. So and Chris, you just said it was really very loud.
There was a lot of construction noise during the day, specifically on the tower that would be the furthest away from Disneyland Park. That's the one that they're currently going through with all of the renovations. I believe the one tower, and correct me if I'm wrong, Steve. I believe the one tower is completely renovated now.
Yeah,
Has the new remodeled bathrooms and mm-hmm. new remodeled hallways and bedrooms.
Yeah, they are very nice.
The one tower that I believe is the Dream, but they're renaming them. When I stayed there in January, it was completely remodeled. And that's the one where they have the fiber optics in the headboards of the bed that do the fireworks, and they have the castle.
And it was very interesting how they arranged the rooms with two beds and then a room with a king bed. Is that in the room with two beds, the castle with fiber optics is centered between the two beds, whereas in a king room, it's directly over the bed itself. So, and it's very interesting how they worked all of that into a headboard wall unit for the beds. It's a very neat design. It's very attractive.
Yeah, and I kept telling everyone, because I stayed there in January and I was in one of the remodeled rooms, and they have this lamp, and there's two buttons on the lamp. One button turns the lamp on, and the other one plays music, like a music box.
But yeah, it plays Dream as a Wish Your Heart Makes.
And it turns on the fiber optic fireworks. But, of course, I was laying in bed, and I kept turning on this music box, and I'm like, when I kept trying to turn the lamp on. So I had no idea that any of the stuff was behind me. So I didn't know until I went back and looked at the rooms and someone showed me. I was like, oh, that's what the music box is for.
Well, it is a very neat effect, it sounds like. And I'm sure when it's all done and newly renovated, it's going to look great. But it does sound like it's still quite a mess over
there. Yeah, it's a mess right now. But they're getting it ready for Cars Land and all the other attractions that are going in. So they'll have that completely done, hopefully.
Now, you were talking about proximity to the park a little bit ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, both Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure are within walking distance to any of these resorts, correct?
Yeah, and also Paradise Pier. I mean, it's just right across. You just literally cross the street and you're there. But Grand Californian is literally attached to the.
California Adventure.
Thank you. Yeah, so Grand California is attached right to California Adventures, and there's an actual gate that you can get into California Adventure through the back entrance there. And then the Disneyland Hotel is at the other end. They're all attached to, or those two hotels are attached to what we would consider to be downtown Disney. So you come out of the Disneyland Hotel and you're right there by the AMC Theater and ESPN.
The gate at the Grand Californian comes right out by Grizzly River Run. And it's also important to note that that's also where you just a very short distance from there is where you pick up your fast passes for World of Color. So if you are staying on site, entering through that gate into California Adventure, it definitely has its advantage in that you're that much closer to get your fast pass later on for that evening for World of Color. All of the Disney hotels are on one side of the park. All of the Good Neighbor hotels are on the other side of the park. So it's very interesting how even though the Disneyland Resort didn't have hotel venues planned originally, they've kept them all together and kind of away from the Good Neighbor hotels. So the benefits are still there of staying on property in proximity to the gates and proximity to the downtown Disney area where you can pick up the monorail into Disneyland.
Yeah, so Disneyland, everything is literally just a 5-10 minute walk. So you can pretty much walk everywhere. And then you stayed, Chris, you stayed at one of the Good Neighbor hotels, I think, on your first night?
On my first night, I stayed at the Hilton Anaheim, which is right adjacent to the Anaheim Convention Center. That's a great hotel if you're looking for kind of a higher-end hotel room. And if there is an availability at one of the Disney hotels, because it really is a very nice hotel. It's actually one of the nicest Hilton properties that I've ever stayed at. So it's really nice. Great restaurant in the lobby. Very high-end materials in the lobby. Very large lobby, which is something that Steve and I had talked about. Is very different, with the exception of the Grand Californian, is that both the Disneyland Hotel and Paradise Pier don't have much of a public space in the lobby, but it is different there at the Hilton Anaheim right next to the convention center. But it is a long walk into the park from there, so you would want to take the resort transportation. And then the two nights before I flew out, I actually stayed at the Hilton Garden Inn, which is right across, about a mile and a half from the main gates there at Disneyland. It's also a Good Neighbor hotel as well. That hotel shares parking lot space with the Embassy Suites and the Hilton Garden Inn. So if you're looking for a Good Neighbor hotel that is in close proximity to the park but still far enough away, that kind of gathering of Hilton properties is really nice because they also have their own private shuttle, and that's $4 per person per day with unlimited trips back and forth. And the shuttles there run every hour and every half hour.
Oh, I wanted to go over on the Disneyland Hotel. We took a look at the concierge lounge. So they have concierge rooms in the Disneyland Hotel. And then on the 11th floor is the lounge. And the lounge has a full set of windows that overlook the parks. And so it's a great place to watch the fireworks at night. And then they have cordials, hors d'oeuvres, and things like that in the lounge. And then they have the music for the fireworks in there as well. So that's a nice extra if you wanted to do a special evening, or if you wanted to get a special room over at the Disneyland Hotel.
It's also important to remember that the Disneyland Park doesn't have fireworks every evening, which I was actually kind of surprised by. They have a seasonal fireworks schedule. In off-peak seasons, it's on weekend nights only. But definitely if you're planning a trip to Disneyland, be sure to check out the fireworks schedule so that way you'll know how to plan in advance, especially to get into see World of Color, which is every night. And it's two times a night during peak periods.
So what did you think of World of Color?
World of Color was absolutely fantastic. When I try to compare it to something at Walt Disney World for someone who might be more familiar with Walt Disney World versus Disneyland, it's a completely different experience. It literally utilizes the most cutting edge technology that is available to Disney. It's the use of LED color, the use of lasers, the use of such high tech fountains and pressurized water cannons. It really is spectacular, and the use of animation in all of that, it really produces what my wife and I like to refer to as mouse mist, the little tear that you get in the corner of your eye when you watch Disney's Nighttime Entertainment. It really is a very exciting production. It's incredible. It really is. If anyone is thinking of going to the West Coast, now and the next year or two, as they do developments, especially at Disney's California Adventure, it would be a great time to go. But it's definitely one of those things that any Disney fan has to see. It's just incredible what the Imagineers were able to come up with, literally using projection technology, compressed air, and water, and the lighting technology. It really is spectacular.
Yeah, I saw it in January, but I saw it in the rain, and it was a totally different experience. And I thought it was great in January, but I didn't realize how much I couldn't see because it was raining. So it was like a totally new show when I saw it on a nice clear night.
Yeah, I got to see it two different times. It was one time was on a Friday night, the other was on a Thursday night. And on the Thursday night that I saw it, all fast passes were distributed for that evening. So it's important to know that if you're planning a trip to the Disneyland park and you want to see World of Color, you will need a park hopper to get into California Adventure to get your fast pass to see World of Color. It's not something that you can just plan to arrive for. You have to get that fast pass ahead of time, which assigns a color zone for you to come back at a specific time. And when they say you will get wet, you will get wet. I was there on a evening where it wasn't really too breezy, but still I left with my clothes were pretty well soaked. You're not going to get hit by major splashing. What you get wet from is anytime the air blows through the fountains, because when you look at the sheer volume of water that they have suspended in the air at a time, anytime the breeze blows or anything, it carries that mist across into the crowd. So much so that when the show is over and you're walking through the area, you can see where the water has cast a shadow of where someone was standing. You can see the dry spot where they were standing. You can see where the water ended up falling around them. But definitely, if it's a cold evening, be sure to take a poncho. I did not, and I left pretty chilled to the bone that evening.
Okay. And then the next morning, we caught a bus from Paradise Pier over to the port over in Los Angeles. I think they usually say it's about 45 minutes, but I think it took us a little less. There wasn't any traffic, so maybe 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah, traffic on the Sunday morning wasn't bad at all.
And then if you've been to the Port Canaveral, they don't have their own building that they've specially constructed over here. So it's a building that Disney uses with all the other cruise ships. It's nice, but it's not something like over at Port Canaveral where it's all done up and has special decorations and a model of the ship or anything like that. But same type check-in, and then we got on the ship. The itinerary, just so you know, it was a 7-day. So we got on Saturday, or I'm sorry, we got on Sunday, and then Monday was at sea. Tuesday was at sea. Wednesday was Puerto Vallarta. Thursday was Cabo San Lucas. Friday was at Cabo San Lucas, and then Saturday at sea, and then Sunday was the debarkation day. So they got rid of Mazatlan and did 2 days at Cabo. And I'd been to Mazatlan in the past, and it's kind of more of a working or industrial port. Cabo is definitely more of a touristy, nice vacation port. So it's kind of nice to have 2 days in Cabo.
I was kind of surprised at how different the Mexican ports are from the Caribbean, in that it's not necessarily too much of a tropical environment. It's definitely more of a desert, still the palm trees, still the sand beaches, but definitely different feeling ports. But actually, I found the Mexican ports a little bit more kind of welcoming in that they're big, they're open, and they're very easy to navigate.
What did you think of the tendering experience in Cabo?
It was a breeze. Disney always had one boat loading, one boat waiting, and there was a constant traffic back and forth. I believe they were using 6 different tendering boats. They had two ports on one side of the ship and then one on the other. So it was a constant traffic back and forth. we didn't have to wait more than 5 minutes for a tender on either morning in Cabo.
Yeah, so they have you go to the Walt Disney Theater, and when your entire party's there, and they stress that everybody from your party has to be there, then they have you sit down, and there was maybe 10 people in there waiting, and we would sit down, and about a minute later, they would tell us to get up, and they'd walk us to the tender. And they have so many of them running that there was never an issue.
And what time in the morning was this?
At 8, I believe, and the next morning the first tender was at 9. For some reason, there was a different difference in the 2 days. But you actually have a lot more time in port on the first day because you do pull out of port late in the afternoon on the second day in Cabo.
Now, what time do you think we caught our tenders? They were in the morning.
It was no later than 11. I mean, it was probably after the initial first rush, but even hearing other guests talking, someone was on the first tender out and they waited about 15 minutes, and that was more or less a walk from the theater down to the tendering dock. So it very simple process. I think Disney handles it very well in that they have an in and an out. So as people are coming in from being out in port, also people are exiting. So you don't there isn't a specific place where you have to go to do one or the other. They really keep up and do a very good job with two-way traffic.
Yeah, and they're using the actual boats from Cabo. A lot of the other ships there are using their own life rafts. So they have like this huge fleet of boats that they're constantly pulling in and off of the Disney ship from Cabo. So I guess back to the cruise, our room, we had a veranda stateroom on deck 5 aft, so the rear of the ship. It's the first time I've been on a veranda. It was really nice. We had the, Chris can probably describe it better, but we didn't have the one with the plexiglass. We had the
white wall.
We had a solid white wall. Yeah. We kind of had the navigator's veranda without the dials and compass and things like that are on a navigator's veranda. It's actually kind of really cool. I had always seen the term on Disney material of navigator's veranda, but I didn't realize that there's actually a compass, a hygrometer, a thermometer, and even a full chart of the ocean, which it's kind of interesting to note that map is of the East Coast, not the West Coast. Disney hasn't done a complete job yet in turning the ship over from an East Coast home base to a West Coast home base, but I would imagine they'll do that when they dry dock later in the year.
Yeah, and the rooms, if you haven't been on, they have the split baths, which are really nice, so it makes it easy to get ready in the morning, so you have the two baths. And then they now have the wave phones. So if you're used to going before, instead of getting a beeper for your kids in the room now, they have, in addition to the regular phone, they have two wireless phones. And you can use them to call each other, so they can call from wave phone to wave phone. Or you can text each other, or you can call back to the room, or you can call any of the facilities on the ship.
And unlike other cruise lines, it's totally free. It comes with your cruise fare. And I heard that other cruise lines charge for that type of phone service, but it is free with Disney's Cruise Line.
Just don't lose it or break it.
Yeah.
Just don't lose it or break it. Don't throw it overboard. Don't drop it in the pool. I believe it was a $250 replacement fee is what you sign off on when you enter into the port. So they are quite expensive, but they're very handy. I was especially fascinated that they could text. So it's a great move to keep up with technology. In looking at the pictures from the Dream, they've really gone to the voice over IP phones, which I imagine the Wave phones integrate even further with. But something else that I thought was really interesting was that for ships on the East Coast, the phones will actually work on Castaway Key. So if you're on the shore and you want to call back to the ship without having to make that walk, all you have to do is pick up your Wave phone and call back to the ship, whether your stateroom or the other phone, whether you want to call back and talk to the kids club or anything like that. You can also do that from Castaway Key, which I thought that was really cool.
That's super convenient. I like that.
Yeah, so they've replaced the beeper system with the Wave phones now.
I'm curious, are they easy to carry around? Do they have belt hooks or?
They're like a little bit smaller than a home wireless phone.
Yeah, if you've seen like the Bluetooth compatible portable phones that you can buy like at Sam's Club or Walmart, wherever, it's about the size of one of those. If you think of what one of the original kind of like what I would call a second generation bar phone as far as cellular phones go, not the flip phone, of course, but the one that was straight up and down, it really is no bigger than...
So a little bit bigger than like a Nokia bar phone.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very small, very convenient. You can easily fit them in your pocket, and the keypads do lock, so you don't have to worry about keeping them in your pocket. But they're very convenient though.
And then we also saw we went and toured all the rooms, so we saw the concierge rooms, which I'd never seen before on the Wonder, and they're just fabulous. They have all this woodwork, and they've got that kind of elegant 1920s, 1930s. Classic ocean liner feel.
We also got to see the Roy Disney suite, which was absolutely incredible. They even have a full lineup of amenities in the concierge and the suites that they don't have in the regular staterooms, and that includes like solar care gel, like aloe vera gel. They even have little tiny bathrobes that are pink and blue.
Oh yeah, for the kids. They have these little cute little bathrobes.
So. And it's really cute because they even have a separate bedroom with the bed split off for the kids. So if you're looking for a really high-level experience on a Disney cruise, definitely look at the concierge level and also look at the Roy and Walter Disney suites on both the Magic and the Wonder. They're really are spectacular rooms. Like Steve mentioned, the woodwork is absolutely beautiful. It's totally unexpected on a cruise ship. In the Roy suite, there was even one of the Bose 321 surround sound systems installed in the room. So if you're looking for a home theater experience right in your cruise line stateroom, it's there. It's very, very interesting to see that on a cruise ship.
Yeah, in the Roy Disney suite, someone had reserved it on the ship. They were getting it ready for a four-year-old's birthday celebration, so they were setting all that up in the dining room. And the suite, cake and all that type of stuff for when they arrived. So it's really good for a special occasion if you've got the money to spend on.
That's quite a birthday for a four-year-old. I think I went to Burger King.
We got lost in that suite just trying to find our way out.
Yeah, they even have the jacuzzi tubs, which are spectacular. Walk-in showers, marble bathrooms, very elegant staterooms.
Yeah, I was excited to have a veranda, and then I went in there. It was unbelievable.
And if anyone ever plans to do the Mexican Riviera this time of year, definitely get a veranda for no other reason than to see the whales, see dolphins, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, see sea lions. It's very cool.
Yeah, so right now is the time of year when all the whales are out, and we saw whales all the time, just constant pods of whales and dolphins and all the sea lions when you get into Cabo.
That gets me excited since I'm
pretty cool.
Gonna be there.
Yeah, I think you're right near the end. I heard middle of March, end of March is when they start to go back up north. So you should still see them.
Excellent. And I know, Steve, you and I talked a little bit about this, but just for our listeners, how did you find the condition of the ship overall? Because I know with the Dream coming on board and the Dream seems to be getting a lot of attention, understandably, but I guess a lot of people have concern that somehow the Wonder is now the ugly stepsister or stepchild or that they're kind of playing second fiddle, the Magic and Wonder.
Yeah, and I didn't, and Chris and I talked about it too, and I didn't notice very many things. I started to look after we talked because I was still on the ship, and, you know, everything looked pretty good to me. The only thing we noticed was a little bit of the carpet in one of the main hallways looked like it was fraying up, and then Chris, I think, noticed in one of the lounges maybe the chair backings needed some work.
Yeah, mainly like upholstery, soft finishing. There were some places in the hallways that were kind of marred up. But something that people have to remember is that cruise ship is circa 1998, 1999. And it is getting ready to go into dry dock. That's something that we were told on the cruise is that when it finishes up, it's Alaskan ports. It will go back and go into dry dock. So they are getting ready to do some upgrades, things of that nature to kind of pull it back up to par. But as far as the rooms being trashed.
Any idea how long it'll be in dry dock?
They didn't say that. We inquired, but that was they said typically it will be in as long as what the magic was last year, which I think was, if I remember right, it was either 30 or 60 days. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. So probably between the first set of Alaska cruises and the second set of Mexican Riviera cruises.
Yes, they said after it finishes up its Alaskan itinerary, which is in the fall, they said it would be going into dry dock after that.
And but even now, I didn't really even notice hardly anything.
Well, I've seen pictures and video online from people, and I didn't see anything in photo. So,
yeah,
it's always a concern though when you'll read a review, and everybody has a different state of mind and opinion mm-hmm. and way of looking at things, of course. But, you know, some people make it sound like the ship is literally coming undone. So it's far from that. It's good to see. And what about the other thing is, of course, service. I mean, with a lot of new people coming on board.
Yeah, I did see a lot of, you know, training tags, because I think a lot of people have gone over to the Dream, and then also they've had to bring in a lot of people. But, you know, I didn't notice any issues with service. Everything was really, really good.
The biggest service kind of snafu that I had heard about was just some incorrect information coming from the guest services desk about what time the ship would be on when we went into Cabo for the first day, because where you have the potential to change time zones three different times on that cruise. Once you've changed once, they go into what of course the captain called ship time, and so make sure you reset your watch to ship time. Don't look at your cell phone. Don't look at the wave phone. Make sure that you look at your watch that's set to ship time, not shore time. And he put it in a very funny way when the first day we went into Puerto Vallarta, he said, make sure you take your camera with you as you leave the ship. Because if you forgot to set your clock to your watch to ship time, you'll want to catch the beautiful sight of the Disney Wonder pulling out into the sunset. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think the only other thing I noticed about service was actually in Palo. But there's an actual private group room in Palo when you enter Palo and you go all the way around to the other side that holds – it'll hold up to 16, but it holds comfortably up to 14. And we had 14 people in that room, and the service was good, but they had one waitress serve all of us for pretty much everything. So our drinks and our appetizers and every taking away of all the dishes and bringing the next course of everybody's dish.
She was very good, but she was extremely busy.
Yeah. So they should have had, for 14 people, I would think, like at least one other person helping her. So it took a while to get through all of that with her trying to do all of it just by herself.
And the rumors you've heard about Palo chocolate souffle definitely live up.
Oh, yeah. The chocolate souffle is great.
It was incredible.
And then the other thing that's good that nobody knows about, or a lot of people don't know about, is the brunch. Because everyone goes to book the dinner, and everyone forgets about the brunch. And they also forget
both.
About the high tea. Did you book the brunch?
I booked both. I booked brunch on the second day, I think.
The brunch is unbelievable. I took video of the brunch. I put it up on the website, so I'll put a link to it. I videotaped the guy taking me on a tour of the brunch. It's worth it. So the brunch is $20 extra, and dinner is also $20 extra. High tea, I didn't have time to do. High tea is $10.
I think that's a bargain from everything I've read and certainly the pictures that I saw that you took. I know I'm going to eat $20 for us. Yeah. I have no doubt.
Well, it's certainly not just eating $20 worth. It's the whole experience, and that's a lot of what Disney charges you for. And
yeah, the service is really good.
It's the service and the experience, the ambiance, all that.
So the other thing I did was the spa. I did the rainforest room. instead of doing a spa package. So if you want to have a affordable spa experience, I guess. So it's $16 a day to get into the rainforest room, which is kind of a relaxation room where they have heated lounge chairs, and then they have three different types of steam rooms. One steam room has kind of a eucalyptus smell in it, and then another one that's a little less hot, a little cooler, is a citrus type aromas. And then there's a dry heat room, and then there's a bunch of different types of showers.
You can get a 7-day pass for that for $99. You're only saving $12 if you're overpaying $16 per day. But especially on at-sea days, it's a great experience.
Yeah. So I was in there. I did that for about 2 hours. And then Stitch came in. So everybody loves Stitch. So it's like Stitch actually walked in there and went into the dry heat sauna.
Wow.
All the women in the dry heat sauna were like, oh, it's Stitch. And he had the lay on and everything. And he was hanging out in the heated lounge chairs. I was like, oh, my God. But that's the other fun thing. Even in the adult areas, like Donald Duck would come by and Goofy would come by, and they'd all be dressed up with their sombreros on and everything. So it was a lot of fun.
They themed it for Mexico. Very cool.
Oh, yeah, they have a Grand Fiesta casting party or something one day up on the top deck. It's a lot of fun. I believe it's on the second at-sea day, the day before you pull into the first Mexican port, if I remember right. But they all the characters they do in the Mexican attire. They have the special Mexican Riviera itinerary pins. They have pins that correlate with each of the individual ports. It's very, very cool. It is.
Yeah, one of the other things was, this was the first time I went and just went to experience it as an adult, because Lisa and I and our two kids usually go. So Amber was 5 when she went on the last cruise on the Disney Wonder, and then Brooke was about 14 months or 13 months. So we always do all the family activities. So this time it was just 7 days of going to the Cove Cafe and the adult pool area, and then getting to see the adult shows at night at some of the clubs, and doing all and going to Palo, and it was really fun. It was, you know, I didn't even notice kids unless you walk through the Mickey kind of pool area, and that's pretty much the only time. And then, you know, maybe a little bit at one of the shows. So it's definitely a fun cruise to go on just as an adult.
And I mean, as adults, you never felt like there wasn't enough to do, or the ship only caters towards kids or anything of that nature.
You know, it was always packed. There was always something that you had to pick from or were running to, or it was just one thing after another. They have like different adult series things you can do. They had one of the, I guess, animators or directors from Disney Studios on board. So he did a couple lectures. So we got to go to a lecture on short films, and we got to see like 3 or 4 different short films that two or three of them that had only been shown at movie festivals and never out to the public. And then one of them he premiered on the ship, which will be shown before the Winnie the Pooh movie. So we were the first ones to get to see that. And then we stayed up till 12:01 midnight to watch the premiere of Romeo and Juliet in 3D on the big screen at the Walt Disney Theater. So there was always like all these fun extra things going on that, you know, were just on the ship.
And of course, you have your towel folding workshops and your napkin folding workshops. Those are always pretty interesting. The tons of things to do. The one day, literally, I didn't have an hour to spare. I went from one activity to another, to another, to another. Especially on at-sea days, Disney does a great job of keeping the adults busy, keeping the kids busy, keeping the teenagers busy. There's just all types of activity going on all around the ship.
Yeah, and I took maybe an hour or two to hang out by the pool and write some notes and get a coffee in the Cove Cafe and do a couple things like that. But the rest of the time, it's just you've got so much to do. You've got the pirate party at night. You've got the fireworks at sea, which are really cool. They do this giant dessert buffet on one of the nights at about 10:30 to 11:30. It's just absolutely amazing with all the different desserts and chocolate fountains and cakes.
And it was also cool that our departure day was Super Bowl Sunday. So they had a Super Bowl party up on the top deck. They had Super Bowl trophy ice sculptures in a couple different places. The Super Bowl logo right on deck. It was really cool. There was not only in Diversions, but also in the Walt Disney Theater. And then up on the Funnel Vision TV up on the top deck, the Super Bowl. So it was a lot of sports stuff going on. People wearing jerseys, things of that nature.
And all kinds of tailgating food, you know, hot dogs and chips and all kinds of stuff like that, and all the different lounges for you to snack on while you're watching the Super Bowl. Yeah, so they moved the sail away party to the next day. And they moved the muster drill. So we didn't have a muster drill to the second day, where you have to do the life jacket thing, because they didn't want to interrupt the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and then the muster drill, you don't have to do, you don't have to, we didn't even have to bring our life jackets, did we?
No, we didn't have to take our life jackets.
Yeah, you don't even have to wear them or bring them anymore.
Said, come as you are.
Yeah, and we just went into one of the clubs, I think.
Animator's Pallet was where our station was.
Right. Yeah, we went to Animator's Pallet, and you just sat down, and they take roll, and they explain how to put on a life jacket, and then you go. So it's much nicer.
And something that whenever we – that kind of on a different topic here, but when we toured the rooms, this is something that's kind of interesting, because anytime that my wife and I, anytime we travel with my parents, we have to make sure that we look out for handicap accessibility and things of that nature, because my mom is in a wheelchair. And the handicap accessible rooms on board the ship are absolutely gigantic.
Yeah.
The one with the veranda, your veranda was literally half of the size of the ship, of the back of the ship. The veranda curved around. There were even bathing loungers, the deck type, out on the veranda, as well as a table and four chairs. So if anyone is ever concerned about handicap accessibility or anything of that nature, there was a full roll-in shower in addition to a bathtub, of course those two were separate, and there was no the floor drain was integrated right in to the threshold, so you didn't have a bump to go over. But then there's also even a closet in that the one stateroom that we went into, if you would need to store a bed lift or anything of that nature, it's right there in the room, and there's plenty of floor space to turn even an electric scooter around. But something that I did learn is you're not allowed to charge the electric scooters inside the rooms due to fire hazards and things of that nature. But there's plenty of room outside of those rooms to charge them in the hallway. So they definitely planned well for a lot of turnaround space and things like that for guests that do have mobility issues. So
I just wanted to jump in on that and point out that, yes, those rooms are very large, lots of space to get around, but they are meant for someone in either the wheelchair or the electric wheelchair.
Yes.
And you're not going to be able to get that room if you ask for it. You do need to be handicapped to be in that room.
Yes.
If
good point,
if it gets
Lisa.
Real close to the, I mean, because they're huge, and of course they're the same price, you know, based on category, and they do, when you get closer to the sailing date, if those rooms are not taken, I mean, we're talking like a week or 2 weeks prior to sailing, so it's real close. If those staterooms are not filled by an actual handicapped passenger, they will release it to the general public.
Very good point.
Don't try and weasel your way into it, because, first of all, that's quite unethical.
Yeah.
It's not fair. And, you know, someone's going to need it, and here you are trying to swipe it away. So just take your chances, and maybe you can upgrade it at a certain point. If you're going on the cruise, yeah, maybe you could. Maybe that's a good way to go about it is, Bob, you listening?
I'm listening, yes.
You know, when you get to that 1 week out, 2 week out point, ask, you know, are those handicap rooms released yet?
But also something to remember is that the handicap accessible rooms do not have a split bath. So.
Yeah, then real quick, getting back to the ports. You know, the ports are really nice. They're, you know, they're commercial, so they have, you know, if you've been to the Caribbean or anywhere in Mexico, they have your, you know, the senior frogs and the traditional souvenir shops and restaurants. But then right outside that area is more of your smaller shops and local areas. So Puerto Vallarta, we walked around, found like a little local taco stand that one of our friends that we met on the ship knew about, and had some really good tacos. Then we actually went and looked at real estate because somebody we were with wanted to look at a condo. So we went into and looked at a super nice condo that was available. Walked by the beach. The beach is right there. Then there was a bunch of sand sculptures that people are making on the beach. We took, instead of the cab ride, we did the local transportation. So we paid equivalent of about 60 cents to get on the bus, which was an experience in itself.
It was the first manual transmission bus that I've been on since probably 1985 in kindergarten.
But it was interesting. And then in Puerto Vallarta, you the port where you dock is right across the street from a Walmart and Sam's Club. I mean, like right there when you get off the ship is Walmart. So it's convenient if you need anything, because you can just walk right into Walmart. And so, you know, people are buying their liquor or their wine or anything that they forgot, and then just come right back on the ship.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see guns that you could buy right off the rack at the Walmart in Mexico. That made quite the flurry of comments on my Facebook page.
Yeah, then with the other one, Cabo San Lucas, you tender in, and we talked about that, really easy process. Giant marina when you come in there. Very nice, very clean.
A lot of yachts.
Yeah, tons of yachts. I mean, there's a huge yacht right there with its own helicopter on the back of the yacht right next to our ship. Two other cruise ships were there the first day, and then I think we were the only ship on the second day. They actually leave, I guess, so they don't have to pay port fees. So when you get on, they actually leave and come back the second day, because our 2 days were right in a row. And they don't actually anchor, I don't believe. They just continually use the side thrusters to keep the ship in a central location.
And then safety issues weren't really a concern.
Yeah, I didn't notice anything. I mean, and I think Chris mentioned, we saw a couple police officers, you know, and of course they're, you know, there with their machine guns.
Yeah, saw a lot of armed, a couple like military type uniformed guards. And then, like Steve said, several different police officers. There was no point during the day when I felt uneasy or I felt that I needed to hide my wallet or anything of that nature. Very, very friendly. There was no, especially in those two ports, it felt safe.
Yeah. And we were, of course, there with Holland America was there and Princess was there. And then, so, you know, you probably have about 2,000 passengers off of those two ships and another 1,600 or 1,500 off of our ship. So you got a lot of Americans in a touristy area.
So for people that are worried and, oh, I'm not getting off the ship, I think you're really going to miss out on excursions or really seeing something. I mean, why would you go all that way and never leave the ship?
Yeah, and we didn't actually do any specific excursions. We just kind of walked around and saw different things. But a lot of the people that we were with, some of them did individual whale watching excursions, and they had a great time doing those. One of them did an ATV tour on the beach where you come back pretty dirty and filthy and gritty. But they had a good time doing that. I think there's actually horseback riding somewhere on the beach that you can do.
Yeah, horseback riding, zip lining.
Zip line, they said a lot of people had a lot of fun doing that.
Something interesting is I thought that the Los Arcos, I thought that would be in some far remote place, but when we pulled into Cabo San Lucas, we literally pulled up right next to it. from our stateroom, Steve and I could see Los Arcos, the big stone arch there at Land's End. We could see that from our balcony, from our veranda. It's right up from where the port is, and there's several colonies of sea lions out there. So if you walk up on the top deck, if you're in an inside stateroom, you can hear that. You can hear the sea lions, and you can see all types of the excursion boats coming in and out. Probably the coolest one that we saw was the pirate looking ship, the day long excursion that they do on a sailboat type galleon, I guess you could say.
Yeah, then also in Cabo, if you don't book an excursion and you're just walking around, I think they have like a water taxi. We walked at the marina. There was a sign for a water taxi for it's like $2 that takes you over to the beach. And there's a little beach just a little ways away if you're looking for something inexpensive to do and wanted to go to the beach for a little bit and then come back.
One thing I definitely wanted to mention is that if you want to take Disneyland Resort transportation, the only airport that you can fly into and out of and participate in Disney Cruise Line's shuttle service is LAX. You can't fly into Santa Ana. The transportation only runs to and from LAX. If you don't plan a trip to Disneyland to start your visit, you'll have to fly into LAX. If you want to visit Disneyland, you can fly into SNA, but then you would have to go back to Disneyland to catch a bus back to Santa Ana Airport, to John Wayne Airport. So you can only do the one-way transportation if you fly into SNA to Disneyland. They do not run chartered buses from the port to John Wayne Airport in Santa Ana. They just don't do that. Their one airport is LAX. Did you want to mention the online baggage check-in, Steve?
Yeah, so I signed up for online baggage check-in, which worked really well. So on, you know, my last day, I got my boarding pass already printed out for Delta Airlines. They have a list of the airlines that participate. And I had my luggage tags already printed, and I just put them on my bags. You leave them outside your door. So when you get off, traditionally, you have to go claim your bags at the port and then drag them through customs. This way, you just put your luggage tags on the bags, and you don't see them until you get back to your airport. So in my case, when I got back to Atlanta, my bags were there on the belt. The only thing is I've got status on Delta, so normally I don't have to pay for any of my bags, but the systems don't talk, so they charge me the Delta baggage fee of $30 per bag, so I paid $60 on my stateroom account to have that done.
And I believe was like a teeny tiny tote bag.
And one of those was like this little yellow tote bag that I just threw some extra dirty laundry in. That cost me $30. But you either you have to do the transfers, I believe, through Disney. And Chris, there was another thing that you had to purchase through Disney to participate in the online or onboard check-in. And I think it's also limited because it says on your thing that, you know, sometimes even if you've signed up for it, you may not be able to participate in it. So they have kind of a limited availability.
Yeah, because they have to make sure that they can get your baggage from the port to the airplane in a reasonable amount of time. So if you plan to leave the ship around 10 o'clock for a 12:30 or 1 o'clock flight, they may not allow you to participate. Because you have to get your bags to the airport and to your specific gate onto your specific plane, and that takes a little bit longer than just transporting a passenger who can guide themselves.
Yeah. Now disembarking is a little different than in Port Canaveral. So normally Port Canaveral you can pretty much get off whenever you want. At the port in LA, it's a little bit smaller, so they don't have enough room to put everybody's bags at one time. So they give you, you know, blue Mickey or yellow Donald or different luggage tags. And then they ask you not to leave the ship until your tag character has been called or later. So you know that your bags are out there and ready for you to pick up. So they'll have you wait in a lounge area. They don't want you to wait in your stateroom, but you can pretty much wait almost anywhere else on the ship in one of the lounges. We went to breakfast, had our breakfast, and you know they had already called our tags. And then when we were done with breakfast, we just left on our at our leisure and got our bags and went on our way. If you're doing the onboard check-in, you can pretty much leave whenever you want because you don't have a specific character that they're going to call. You can also take your luggage off on your own if you like.
It's something to remember, too. If you have a late dining, you're going to also have a late breakfast. So if you do want to make it back to the airport a lot more quickly than what you would if you were to go to your sit-down dining, the beach blanket, the buffet on one of the top decks is open for an hour that morning. So that way you can go grab buffet breakfast and head right off the ship. I believe that opens at 7:45, if I remember correctly.
That's going to wrap up the show for this week. You can download our shows at mousechat.net and also from iTunes. Please send us your comments and questions to mousechat. That's going to wrap it up for this week's show. You can download our shows at mousechat.net and also from iTunes. Please send us your comments and questions. Send those to comments@mousechat.net. Join us again next week here on Mouse Chat.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You gotta do it without laughing.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mouse Chat. Tune in again next week when we talk about the Smurfs.